Welcome to episode 19 of All the Small Takes. I'm Cooper, obviously not Jeff. Jeff decided to ditch us, to bail this week. He's off in Hawaii, spending his honeymoon with his new wife, instead of being here talking sports with me and John. John, how do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, I understand Jeff wanted to spend some time with Mrs. Jeff, especially now that there is a Mrs. Jeff. But at the same time, this is now the fifth time we've tried to record this podcast. So
Over two days.
So I think we're missing him just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit. Before we get going, John, give the listeners what they want. Where can they find us on social media?
Right. You can find us on Twitter at Small Takes. You can find us on Facebook at all the Small Takes. You can find us on Instagram, All the Small Takes. And you can also email us at allthesmalltakes@gmail.com. Guys, and I am happy to report that we are now up to 12 reviews. We get three more. Cooper and I will drop that that crying / fake deer mating call
mixtape
weird video.
The mixtape.
That's what we're calling it now. So keep your heads on a swivel. We're only three reviews away. So,
okay, should we stop the podcast here? I feel like that's the furthest we've gotten without
that
any kind of glaring mistakes.
Okay, so make a mark of the time that we're into it, and you'll know that that's where you need to. It's the first cut.
All right, so not much is really going on in sports. We're recording right now live during the NBA draft. We're probably up to what, like pick 16 now? Not exactly sure. So a guy named Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open. I honestly can't think of any other kind of major sports headlines. So it's time. It's time we talk baseball. Jeff isn't here. He typically holds us back on the baseball conversations. I think we just kind of
– this is true.
We just let it loose here. So, John, baseball updates. Hit me.
Right. In a real shocker, the Phillies are bad. They are one of the worst teams in baseball currently, and apparently we're on pace to be historically bad. We just lost two extra inning games to the Cardinals in a row. Both of them we had like a 6-1 lead going into the eighth or ninth inning, and the Cardinals tied it up and then forced us to play 15 and then 11 innings before breaking our hearts. We keep calling guys up from the minors, and then they sort of they look really exciting, and then they wilt before our eyes, and then we just kind of ship them back down and say, you know, why don't you stay there for a little bit longer? And we're never going to be good. This is sad. But, you know, you got to just trust the process.
Oh, are they using that now with the Phillies?
Nah, they're not. They really should be. Actually, I don't think there's much of a process to trust. Yeah. I think it's
that was
just
my next
really,
question.
Yeah, this is just depressing. That's all it is.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any better news to report. The Reds are 30-41. They're in last place in the NL Central. They're bad. There was a point in the season where I was actually like feeling pretty good. The Reds were, I don't know, one game below 500. They were two games out of the division. And I knew it was all – something was going to happen because I started reading all these articles about how the Reds should start trading away their players and trading away their assets to build for the future, especially for teams who are looking to get better before the trade deadline. The inevitable happened. They lost – I think they are like 1-11 in their last 12 games, which is not a good record. So just, I think, bad news coming out of Cincinnati, and therefore I don't care about baseball.
Yeah, it's just sad.
Just sad. Maybe not so sad, or maybe sad. I don't know. I don't really pay attention to baseball. We should probably give Jeff a report about the Red Sox. How are the Sox doing? I mean, he's probably not paying much attention to sports news, so hopefully he listens to the podcast, or hopefully not. We can give him his update. How are the Red Sox doing?
Well, yeah, you know, it's been a crazy, I think, 12 days for the Red Sox. I mean, they've lost 12 games in a row. Mookie Betts has been concussed.
Wow, they've played 12 games in 12 days.
I know it's a crazy schedule. I don't know what Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball were thinking, but you know, they threw it out there. Mookie Betts has been concussed and is out for the foreseeable, you know, future, meaning they don't think he's coming back for at least 2 years. Chris Sale tore both rotator cuffs and is going to need Tommy John surgery on top of that on Monday night. You don't see that often at all. Xander Bogaerts, he tore both ACLs as well as both MCLs, and then also broke his femur trying to slide into second base. It was a really weird angle he took. And then Pablo Sandoval decides to call it quits, and he's retiring in the middle of the season. Yeah, he was too fat. He was tired. He realized he could be fat and not have to pretend like he's good at baseball anymore because he's made so much money. So he's just calling it quits. So, I mean, yeah, the Red Sox are in complete and total free fall. I mean, there were reports coming out of Boston that Fenway Park is structurally unsound. Mm-hmm. And there's an ownership group made up of, I think, Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney and a couple of other guys who were thinking about buying the Sox and moving them down to New Orleans, because there's just, you know, crazy stuff going on for the Red Sox.
Good lookout for baseball.
Yeah.
John, you did make baseball way more entertaining than it normally is. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, that's where talking baseball just needs to end on this podcast. We're going to move on to the NBA. Let's see. What do we got? I'm going to say we're going to do pre-draft stuff first.
Okay.
Because I think that makes sense. Okay. Before we get to the draft, let's go ahead. I think there are a couple of trades, John, that I want to get your opinion on. So let's first talk about the D'Angelo Russell trade. The Lakers shipped D'Angelo Russell plus Timofey Mozgov and his awful, awful, awful contract that the Lakers never should have given him to the Nets for Brook Lopez. Good trade for both teams. What do you think?
Well, I think sort of zooming out and looking at this as sort of a NBA trends perspective, I think this is emblematic of how teams are going to start to follow the process and how they rebuild their teams in the near future. The Laker, D'Angelo Russell is a good basketball player. He's a promising young guy, maybe not someone you can build a team around, but someone who certainly has talent and can certainly contribute to your team. But the Lakers are getting rid of him because that's not what they're looking for. They're looking for a once in a generation, like truly great player who can lead them and who can be the next great Laker, and who can play alongside Paul George probably in a year or so, and who can complement Brandon Ingram a bit better. And so what we're seeing here is the Lakers offloading a lot of talent and also a bad contract to get a draft pick in return. And I like it. I think it's probably good for the Lakers. It's not bad for the Nets because D'Angelo Russell is certainly a better basketball player than they've had on their team in a while.
Hey, don't undersell young. Jeremy Lin.
Oh yeah, I guess he was. Is he still with them? I thought he was in Charlotte.
No, that was pre-Brooklyn. It's hard to keep track of Jeremy Lin.
So yeah, everyone just keeps moving him. anyway, so yeah, I don't think it's a bad trade for Brooklyn. But Brooklyn is they're in a bad place right now. They can't even start to rebuild because they don't have anything to rebuild with.
Yeah, it's really hard to see where Brooklyn ever really improves as a team. I think this was a good trade, and I called you out on this, I think, in recording 2. So episode 19.2, I called this a good move because it was clearly, I think, showing that the Lakers wanted Lonzo, and they did indeed go out and draft Lonzo Ball this evening. So good move for them. I think they get Lonzo. Maybe Lonzo turns out to be a better player than D'Angelo Russell. I think probably at the very worst, he's the same player as D'Angelo Russell. It was a great move getting rid of Timofey Mozgov's contract because it opens up room for them to sign a big player next season, most likely Paul George, maybe LeBron James. Don't want to talk about those rumors. We'll save them for the very end. So, yeah, I think it was a good move for the Lakers. I think Magic Magic thinks he is capable of signing a big player, and that's what this move was kind of was about, is preparing them for that. Next trade that I think you're way more interested in would be the Celtics and the Sixers swapped picks. And we kind of know the results of, the fruit of that swap. So, John, what do you think of that?
Right. So the Sixers swap the number 3 pick along with a conditional first rounder in either next year or the year after to the Celtics for the number 1 overall pick. And for the Sixers, that turned into Markelle Fultz. And for the Celtics, they've taken Jason Tatum. And I think this is amazing. I love this pick. I mean, I think it's amazing for the Sixers. The Sixers are getting a guy who really finishes the process. He can get on the court. He can play alongside Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Dario Saric and Robert Covington. And it's going to be an amazing combo of players. And I think the Sixers are going to be good for a very long time if they can keep this core of young guys together and if they can all stay healthy. I am so excited that the process has come to fruition. I love Joel Embiid. So stoked about this. The Celtics, I'm not really sure about this for them. It looks like Danny Ainge is being Danny Ainge, and he's just kicking the can down the road. And he's kind of like reading the tea leaves and going like, well, you know, LeBron is kind of in the latter half of his prime years. In theory, he's going to stop being good in, I don't know, 5 to 8 years or whatever, and then, you know, retire. And what Danny Ainge and the Celtics are doing, it looks like, is they're playing for this kind of amorphous future and hoping that they can fill the void once LeBron comes down off the mountaintop. And I think that's silly, and I think that's dumb, because I think they have now handed a division rival in the Sixers the last piece of the puzzle, and they're missing out on that future that they were looking at.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I get it. I get that they didn't want to draft Fultz, and then therefore kind of knew that their guy was going to be sitting there at 3, so you take the value when you get the value. Yeah, but it did open the door for the Sixers, and now the process is complete, and maybe the Sixers will actually kind of compete in that division. You do have to play each other 4 times a year. So, yeah, it's an interesting move. The Jason Tatum pick by the Celtics, I like it. I think Jason Tatum can be a very good player. Obviously, has injury problems. I think, don't quote me on this because I'm not one of those guys who spends a lot of time delving into the recruiting class rankings and player rankings coming out of high school, but I'm pretty sure Jason Tatum was number 1, if not the very top of his class. Supposed to be a very big player at Duke until he kind of just got hamstrung by injuries. So
just to clarify, is number 1 not at the very top of his class?
I was trying. I think if I didn't say this, I meant to say he was either number 1 or like near the very top of his class.
Okay.
Okay. So Jason Tatum could turn out to probably be the best player in this draft. That's a possibility. I still just think the timing is weird. I just don't get it. Like, Celtics, why did you not move this pick 4 months ago? 4 or 5 months ago and actually compete this year? It still blows my mind. And there are probably other moves that Danny Ainge is going to make before next season begins, because he just swallows picks. He will take all the picks in the world until they're gone. So one day maybe he'll actually do something with them.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Maybe he will one day, but as of right now, the Sixers battle station is fully operational and they're getting ready to go. So.
Okay, I'm leaving you behind on that metaphor and moving on to the next trade that we have to talk about. The Jimmy Butler to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah.
For Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and 18th pick. So the T-Wolves gave up a lot for Jimmy Butler. What do you make of this trade?
Yeah, they did give up a lot. And I think you got to believe that the Celtics – had a similar offer on the table to the Bulls, maybe even a better one, because they could part with Marcus Smart. They could part with, I think, 3 or 4 first round picks right now without touching anything that is theirs, without touching their own first round picks and shutting themselves out of future drafts like other teams have done. And They didn't. The T-Wolves were the team that won out on this. And I you got to assume that Chicago's looking to the future and they're going, look, if we got to deal Jimmy Butler somewhere, let's send him to the West. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to have to play him every year. Let's send him somewhere where when we do get good again, we're not going to be playing him. But I think also this makes the T-Wolves a very scary team. They're a team that's like the Sixers, but I think to a lesser extent in terms of their young core. They have Karl-Anthony Towns, who is an amazing basketball player and a proven talent in ways that Joel Embiid, unfortunately, is not, because Joel got injured. But beyond Karl-Anthony Towns, there's a huge drop-off with Andrew Wiggins and the rest of the
hold on, totally disagree. Their starting five, I just wrote it down, is kind of intimidating. Okay.
Nope.
Okay, so their starting five right now, I just wrote it down, is Ricky Rubio, Jimmy Butler, Wiggins, Karl-Anthony Towns, and I guess Yang. They'll keep it the five. I think that starting five is probably not going to compete with the upper tier of the West in terms of the Rockets, the Spurs, and the Warriors. It's a super athletic starting five. Defensively, that's a tough team to play. I think the T-Wolves are going to be good. And I hate to say it, John. I think next year the T-Wolves will probably be better than the Sixers. Maybe not in the long run, but I think for the near future, the T-Wolves are probably built to have a little bit more success.
Well, that's what I was saying. As long as by near future, you mean next year. I think 2 years from now, the Sixers will have surpassed the Timberwolves because – I think the talent level is the potential ceiling for the Sixers is considerably higher than it is for the Timberwolves starting five. We know what Jimmy Butler is. He's not gonna grow his game any more at this point. He's pretty amazing as he is. Karl-Anthony Towns has got room to grow.
Wiggins has room to grow.
Wiggins does, yeah. But I think that's two guys on your roster that you're looking to grow versus five.
Sure. Regardless, I think good trade for both teams. The Bulls probably – I mean, the Bulls got a lot more out of Jimmy Butler than they would have ever gotten with the Cavs. I think good trade for both teams.
Yeah, I love Chris Dunn. I think it's a great future point guard for the Bulls.
Why do you love Chris Dunn?
Big East basketball, baby.
Okay. Yeah. Any other draft reactions, John?
I was not surprised that Lonzo Ball went second. I was a little surprised Jason Tatum went third. I thought they were going to take Josh Jackson.
Yeah, I did. I thought Josh Jackson was the pick there.
I guess Jason Tatum has got –
it's just what we heard.
And I guess Jason Tatum's got a little bit more of that upside in terms of you haven't seen him play a whole season yet, like consistently because of the injuries. So sure. In theory, he's got more to grow. But I think – I don't know. I don't know why you don't – go with Josh Jackson right there. But the Celtics, they can gamble a bit more because they already have a team. They already have the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
All right. I have two more questions. It might just be one, though, depending on time. Who's the better president of basketball operations, Phil Jackson or Magic Johnson?
This isn't even close. It's Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson understands what it means to build a team, as we can see from, I think, is – 2 months of being a basketball executive. Phil Jackson has been in charge of the Knicks front office for over 2 years. I think he's going on, I think he'll be past the 3 year mark sometime this summer. And it's been garbage. He drafted Kristaps Porzingis. Good job. Now he's going to trade Kristaps Porzingis. Terrible decision. He can't get rid of Carmelo Anthony. All he can do is upset his players and force them to play a system that none of them fit in. He can't even find the right players for the system that he wants them all to play. And I mean, it's ridiculous. They drafted this guy from France who's been a pro since he's 15. Looks like he's got some pretty high upside to him. It could be exciting, but I just don't get what Phil Jackson is doing. He's a smart guy. He knows basketball, but gosh, he's doing the worst job of anyone in the NBA.
Yeah, regardless of all the like actual decisions he's made as a GM, his attitude and the way that he approaches his players and just frustrates all of them, like, that's just unacceptable. It's unprofessional. Like, why are you doing it? It doesn't help you.
It's bizarre.
He is undersold. He has depreciated Melo and Porzingis just by everything he's done. And if you want them off their team, off your team, the way to actually get rid of them is to not come out and publicly say that you want to get rid of them. It's just typically not how business really operates, or I should say good business operates.
Yeah, no. I mean, we probably ought to be talking about Kristaps Porzingis to the Timberwolves, because he would fit in with that trade in a little better way than Jimmy Butler would. And Phil could have gotten a similar deal, maybe not quite as good, but had he actually known how to be a GM in the NBA, we could be talking about like this great coup where he got these, you know, a bunch of young guys and a couple more picks for his team to actually build on. But
yeah,
it's bizarre.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. The Cavs suck. That's it. Moving on.
Oh, yeah, so terrible being NBA runner-ups.
I know. Well, LeBron's leaving next year. Kyrie's gone in 2019. Just.
Oh, yeah. All the NBA rumors.
The apocalypse is happening in Cleveland. Anyways, moving on to our segments. This week we thought that since it's just the two of us, we'd run through a bunch of different segments to keep it kind of fresh, avoid the conversation from getting stale. And since Jeff isn't here and we're clearly, I don't know, suffering from the lack of Jeff, we're going to kind of focus on Jeff a little bit through these segments. So we'll start off with our fire four of Jeff's heroes. John, you want to go first?
Sure, yeah. So my first guy is Martin Short. Now, Short is a guy who I think a lot of people look up to in the acting world, and a lot of people, you know, think of him as a guy who reaches, you know, for a lot of stuff. And Short really really grabs those parts, and he really plays them well. And I know that's something Jeff really admires about Short, is just how his ability to really stretch himself and you know really reach beyond what he is to really take on some of these weird characters like Jiminy Glick. So yeah, Short.
All right, so yeah, kind of just bouncing off that, my number four guy I think fits in really well with the like description you just gave would be Nate Robinson. I think was just known for, I mean, literally for his ability to stretch himself to the rim. I mean, just pulled off some, I mean, pretty amazing dunks, and the passion that he played with and the intensity that he played with on the court, night in, night out. I know it's something Jeff looks up to.
Yeah. My number three is Gandhi, you know, someone who never really looked down on anyone. Always someone a lot of people looked up to, though. Big fan of just talking stuff out and being really a guy who cast a long shadow, despite being a man of like a few words and stuff.
Agreed. Kevin Hart is my number three. Kind of not similar at all to Gandhi. Gandhi was a man of a few words. Kevin Hart is a man of many, many, many words. But I think he's an incredible comedian, and somehow he finds himself, you know, appearing in a new movie every single week, which I think is always impressive. I know Jeff loves him, listens to him all the time. Definitely one of his heroes.
My number two guy is a man of legendary stature. And that's Danny DeVito. He's just an incredibly accomplished actor, acts on the Broadway stage, and a bit of a musician too. Kind of a sneaky musician. That's something Jeff loves. He loves the musical side of things, and Danny DeVito is someone he constantly looks up to. Just a guy who really towers over the profession.
Yeah, my number two is Messi. This is a little – I debated for a long time about whether or not I should put him at the number one. I probably would have put him first, but Jeff doesn't love soccer. But Messi is an incredible player, perhaps the best soccer player we've ever seen. The things that he's been able to do on and off the field, and the heights that he's been able to, I think, reach over his career is very impressive. Just a consummate professional, and I know Jeff looks up to that.
My number one is really a guy who's cast his name throughout history and, you know, throws his influence everywhere. Someone who's towered over the history of Europe and of, you know, the modern world as it is. And that's Napoleon. So one of Jeff's, I think maybe Jeff's greatest hero is Napoleon. Maybe just rivaled with your number one.
Yeah, he keeps that very close to his heart. So my number one is Frodo. I know it's a fictional character, whatever. Jeff still loves Frodo, loves the things that he's able to accomplish in the Lord of the Rings, the way that he just wears the ring and kind of takes that burden upon himself to save the world, I think is very impressive. And I know Jeff especially relates to the big hairy feet that Frodo has, and that despite those big hairy feet, he's still able to do a lot. And I know that means something to Jeff. So those were our four, our fire fours of Jeff's heroes. You can tell us what you think. But we're going to have to move on to Hot Take Time Machine. So John, how about you go ahead and explain this segment?
Right. So for those of you that don't remember Hot Take Time Machine, we're going to hop on our Hot Take Time Machine, and we get the chance to change one event. In this case, it's going to be one event in Jeff's life, and then talk about the ripple effects that it has on the rest of it. So I'll go first. I'm going to hop in the time machine and go back to January 30th, 2013. So freshman year of college for Jeff, and little known fact, but Questlove, the leader of the Roots band who from the Tonight Show, often visits Notre Dame to visit a spiritual director who is Father George, the rector of Alumni Hall. And one night while finishing up spiritual direction with Father George and getting ready to walk out of the dorm, he happens to walk past the chapel and hear the dulcet tones of a young cajon player, hard at work, practicing his craft. And this is, of course, none other than a young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed freshman, Jeff Agar. So Questlove comes in, does a couple sets with Jeff, really gets a feel for his rhythm and his music, and invites him to come join the Roots. And Jeff becomes a big shot cajon player, really helps the cajon go mainstream in American society, and goes on to be known as the father of the cajon, the cajon father, as the people in the music industry call him.
Wow, that's remarkable. What Jeff's life, yeah. I mean, what his life could have been. Anyways, my hot take time machine, just jumping in the time machine, going back. It's not so much anything that Jeff's going to do differently. It's just I'm inserting one particular person into his life. It was pretty typical for us in college to go to Meijer and, you know, do our grocery runs for our dorm room. And Jeff always, on the way out of Meijer, would stop by and, you know, ride the pink penny pony for at least a couple minutes. And I think, I don't know when it would have happened. I guess maybe sophomore year. His sophomore year, a rare horse jockey scout. I mean, there aren't many of those in the world. Happens to be in South Bend, Indiana, walking into the same Meijer that we currently frequented, and notices that Jeff has a rare natural ability to ride the penny pony, and basically decides that he really should have been a jockey his entire life. So of course this changes Jeff's life. He has to drop out of Notre Dame. He spent He spent 6 months training to become an elite jockey while constantly finding the stigma of still just being a little too short, even for a horse jockey. He becomes a rider of American Pharoah, and then of course wins the Triple Crown as the shortest horse jockey ever.
Wow.
That's what could have been. And I just love giving Jeff all of those regrets while he's on his honeymoon.
Well, hopefully he's not listening to the podcast while he's on his honeymoon.
It was really bro move.
Yeah.
Moving on to bandwagon, we thought that since it is honeymoon season, for those of you who might be planning your honeymoon, we're going to give you our bandwagon of honeymoons. And I'll go ahead and go first. I was thinking World Cup 2018. That's a hot honeymoon destination right now.
It is.
Doesn't, and what bride doesn't want to go to Russia and just watch soccer games every single day?
Sounds amazing.
Sounds like a great honeymoon. All right, John, what you got?
Right. So this is a pretty hot up and coming trend. I know a lot of brides and grooms are going on the tour of the great American battlefields. Maybe start at Gettysburg, work your way down the Atlantic coast, but really all it takes is a camper van and your Weber grill, and you can go camp out at all these great historical sites and grill up some burgers and maybe some brats and just really enjoy your newly wedded life.
Mm-hmm. Nothing puts you in the mood like a recitation of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh, not at all. Should I do it now?
No.
No. Okay.
Also, if you can't sell the World Cup 2018, just go for the staycation. Saves lots of money, which I know is always a very attractive thing when you're trying to sell that to your bride about a honeymoon. Just stay in your home city, stay in for a couple of days, and then just go back to work. I mean, what could be better than that?
Yeah, maybe grab some ramen. Personally, I don't like Easy Mac, but if it's there, maybe use that. Save a couple bucks.
Sure. Love it. All right. Transitioning into dope or not, we're going to go through a series of wedding theme dope or not, maybe something that John, you can get some advice from me through this dope or not as you're kind of planning your wedding.
Right. Yeah. So I'm planning my own wedding. It's coming up at the end of the year. So figured I'd run some of these ideas past Cooper and see what he thinks. So first off, tweed suits. What do you think? Dope or not?
Always dope. Don't care how hot it is, even if I'm sweating through the tweed suit. Super dope, especially because it's a suit, not a tux, and I am so sick of tux rentals.
Yeah, not a fan of tux rentals. Tux rentals, hashtag not dope. All right, okay, now this gets to a little bit of a trickier ground. We're going to start talking some dessert here. Wedding cake, big feature in the reception. Everybody wants a huge one. Everyone wants all these bizarro flavors. What do you think about wedding cake filled with raspberries? Straight up raspberries.
Never dope, because I could die. I'm allergic to raspberries.
Newsflash, Cooper's allergic to raspberries. We will not have raspberries at the wedding reception.
All right, John, what do you think, though?
What do I think? I don't like... Well, see, I don't like fruit inside my dessert. I prefer fruit on top.
You're gonna give me dessert. Don't give me fruit. All right, just give me the sugar. Give me the chocolate. I don't need no healthy fruit in my wedding cake.
I like fruit with dessert, but just put it on top. Put it on top.
Okay.
All right. So this one's a bit of a tradition that's kind of gone out of vogue. But maybe we're thinking about bringing it back. Throwing birdseed at people.
I have no idea what this is. Have never heard of it, nor seen of it.
Really?
Not dope. I don't get this. Unless you're trying to create a Cinderella scene where the birds just flock all around you and you create this wonderful, in harmony with nature kind of moment. No, even that's weird. Not dope.
I guess maybe it's a big thing on the East Coast, which is Philly, where my family hails from, but it used to be that you would throw rice at people, but then birds eat rice and then they explode. So you switch over to bird seed and you throw a bird seed at people as the bride and groom, sorry, not just people in general. It's not just a bird seed fight at the reception. The bride and groom, as they walk out of the church, you throw a bird seed. Okay. All right. Well,
no, this is clearly, no, that's weird.
Well, we'll think, we'll put a pin in it. We'll come back.
Okay.
All right. Last one, transportation for the bridal party from the wedding to the reception, from the reception to the hotel, always a big deal. What do you think about, instead of renting out a party bus, going with a van? Or better yet.
And what type of van are we talking about? Are we talking about a van with no windows? Are we talking about a school bus? I mean, because that could be considered a van. What's going on here?
I'm talking about a 2005 black Chevrolet Suburban that has somewhere between 250 and 350,000 miles, and leaks a bit of oil every now and again.
Do we consider those vans? I mean, if we could go back and get in one of those, like, I even forget what they were called, like the Ford Aerostars with some, like, I don't know, like neon underlighting, like underglow, that could be dope. I don't know. I think it depends what you do to this van. I'm okay with the van option.
You okay with the van option?
Yeah. Always dope.
Always dope. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for now. We'll probably revisit the segment as I come up with more outlandish ideas. What do you think, actually, before we go, before we move on, what do you think about, say, hypothetically speaking, your fiance maybe isn't totally on board with the idea of having Star Wars really anywhere in the wedding or the reception, and then you slip the band a couple extra bucks to play the throne room theme from the end of the episode 4 as you walk into the reception? I think that's dope or not?
Yeah, we've kind of walked away from our expertise of sports here. Dope. That's dope.
Good. We'll go with that then. We'll go with that.
That's dope. All right, and so
don't listen to this episode, Caitlin.
Yeah, that was our last segment, John. So, well, not really. So let's just go ahead and we'll wrap up the show with our waste of data, John.
As always. So my waste of data is Paul Pierce recently said that Kevin Durant is better than LeBron James. I'll grant you that Kevin Durant did win an NBA title this year and LeBron James did not. But as I've said multiple times on this podcast, LeBron James is the best basketball player in the world right now. This is bizarre. I really don't understand what's happened to Paul Pierce as he's, you know, played less and less basketball, but he starts saying stranger and stranger things. Maybe he needs to get a pickup league going. Maybe he needs to join the 3-on-3 league so he can keep the basketball flowing and keep sort of the sanity going on in his head. But this is bizarre. LeBron's better than KD.
Paul Pierce could take Chauncey Billups' spot when Chauncey Billups becomes the president of basketball operations for the Cavs.
Yeah.
So Paul Pierce, job opening. Yeah, I was really close to choosing Kevin Durant for my wasted data because of all the tweets that he sent out to other Twitter users and actually like kind of getting a little nasty with them, which I don't think is really ever good if you're an athlete who makes millions and millions and millions of dollars and just won the Larry O'Brien trophy and was – MVP of the playoffs. Maybe just not the smartest move, but I'm going somewhere else. I'm going with LeVar Ball, who has said many outlandish things. But this one was just ridiculous. He said this past week that his middle son is not going to the NBA. His middle son's name is LiAngelo. And maybe that's true. LiAngelo is going to play at UCLA. Maybe he's not good enough to play in the NBA. But coming off of Father's Day, I just don't know if that's really the best dad move, really, to say, son, you can't make it to the NBA. But it's okay. It's okay because your older brother and your younger brother are going to make millions of dollars. So they got you covered.
Yeah, as the resident middle son correspondent on this podcast, I got to say, you know, my dad has never just, you know, pulled me aside and gone, look, Johnny boy, you know, Jim and Will, they're going to make it in the NBA, but you, man, your shot's just terrible. You had no chance, bud, but have fun.
Was that because your dad was actually a good dad, or was that because none of you guys are good at basketball?
Well, okay, so no. Dad, I don't think dad would ever say that to me. He normally laughs when we go out and we play basketball. He doesn't say anything, just sort of laughs and walks back inside. So
no. Yeah, your dad's awesome. LeVar, not awesome. I think that's pretty, I think, well understood by now. And that's the end of our show. Tell us what you think, or don't tell us what you think, because Jeff wasn't here. We clearly need Jeff. You can visit all the social media things that John alluded to earlier in the show. We'll catch you next week.
Dope.